Great job. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you. Here's our next speaker, Dale Lemons with Interstate Wood Products, to talk about the state of the trucking industry. And obviously, as an owner and operator of his trucking company, he's got some really critical insight for us. Thank you, Dale.
Thanks, Anthony. Everybody hear me okay? I've got a pretty big voice that I'm going to blow you out, and I don't want to make this thing ring. So I'm not sure if it was by design that puts a trucker behind a sexual harassment expert or not, but anyway, truckers by nature probably are a little bit more salted than some, so I'm used to that kind of thing. Do we have power for the presentation? Okay, I was asked to talk about hours of service and ELDs, and I'm between you and lunch. So we'll roll through things. Like I told Anthony, I'll be happy to talk in the weeds as much as you all want to. How many people run trucks in the room? So we've got quite a few of you. How many are actual trucking companies? That's all you do. For most of all you do. So I'm the only one. So I get to be the expert today. So there's been quite a few changes in hours of service over the years. And the ELDs, as everybody's seen, has really brought out the lack of flexibility in hours of service. So hours of service, fairly significant change back in 2003. We went from 10 hours of driving, 8 hours off between shifts, to 11 hours of driving, 14 hours total, and 10 hours off between shifts. Then in 2013, they went to a 30-minute mandatory rest break. Drivers hate that. And they did a couple of things with the 34-hour reset. Had to have two consecutive 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. time periods off to qualify for that. That has since been rescinded, which has been a great thing. That was really restrictive for most of our people. Right now, FMCSA is an advance notice of proposed rulemaking on 4 specific areas. The short haul provision, anything under 100 miles, has always been maxed out at 12 hours. Or you had to keep a law. They're going to try to push that to 14 hours, so they're taking comment on that now. So even under 100 miles, you would be able to go 14 hours, 11 hours of driving time still. Be able to extend the extend your day to 16 hours. Presently, you can go from 11 hours of driving to 13 if you hit unexpected adverse conditions. Unexpected is huge. We run up in the Northwest over the Cascade Mountains all the time. The officers have told us in the wintertime you should expect snow on the mountains. So you don't get to extend your day if you should have expected that. It's 4, and we run through Portland quite a bit. Portland's got horrific traffic. We need to expect it's going to be horrific traffic going through Portland. So it's the crash on I-5 that closes down the freeway for 2 hours. It's the unexpected adverse conditions that will only pertain to this. So right now you can extend drive hours, but you can't extend your total day from 14 to 16. This would allow you to extend your day also so that you can take in that loading and unloading. Possible elimination of the 30-minute rest break. Right now, we're mandated to take a 30-minute rest break between, well, anything prior to 8 hours, at 8 hours or less. The sweet spot is between 6 and 8, so the drivers are trying to take a lunch break from between 6 and 8 hours, because if they work 14, they've got another 8. If they take it an hour 4, and they work 14 hours, they've got to take a second one. It's really restrictive. Drivers would rather take a break when they need to. Take a break at 2 hours, 15 minutes. Take another break at 8 hours, another 10 or 15 minutes. They're in and out of the truck loading and unloading. So we think it'd be a lot actually better for safety if the driver has some discretion, and maybe they get a 30-minute rest break, but it's going to be taken in small segments. And then using split sleeper berth, right now you're mandated to take at 1 8-hour if you use sleeper berth. I don't know if anybody does, but anyway. Most of the time, sleeper berth was always done in 5 and 5 if you're running teams. They go 5 hours on, 5 hours off. So they're doing some pilot testing now to be able to do some of that, to possibly have some flexibility on that. ELDs. That's been the biggest thing that has happened over the last 2.5 years now. The rule was passed and finalized December 17th of 2015. We had 2 years to implement it. And yet, people were surprised, December of 2017, oh my gosh, I've got to put ELDs in. So we had 2 years to implement it. Sorry, first day with my new tongue. 2 years to implement, and yet a lot of folks waited until the last month to put ELDs in, or even call a vendor and say, I need to have ELDs 2 weeks from now. The vendors couldn't even make them that fast. So FMCSA pushed that out to April 1 of this year, where they were actually going to start enforcement. They've done quite a few exemptions. I think hazmat, some of the agriculture, and some of those things that exempted from ELDs, and then older equipment. This is a description of ELDs. I'm not going to read it. Probably the most the biggest thing on these is that the ELD manufacturer has to self-certify. So they've got to self-certify that they meet the ELD standard. There are a few vendors, ours being one of them, that has gone out to a third-party certification group and actually done a third-party certification. Then it's incumbent on the carrier to go back in, so on, when you buy that, you need to make sure that your vendor is certified, and then you've got to go back periodically to make sure that they stay certified. It's incumbent on the carrier to do that, to make sure they haven't been decertified. And if they are, you're the one responsible. Sure, this can work. Oh, there we go. Oh, and too far. God. There we go. So who must comply? If you were required to use paper logs before, you're required to do an ELD now. That's probably the simplest way. So if you run outside of a 100-mile air radius, you're running over 12 hours, you need to use an ELD. They're pretty simple. I drive a little bit myself once in a while. They're really easy, basically pushing buttons all day long. At the end of the day, you log out and it's filed with your company. Drivers, once they get used to these, they're a little bit apprehensive up front, but once they get used to them, if that ELD is down, they will come tell you, get that ELD fixed or I'm not driving that truck. Because it's so much easier for them to file that. For the company, it's absolutely fantastic. You wouldn't believe some of the ways that paper logs come in. They've been dropped in the mud, they've got coffee stains all over them, those kind of things. It's really hard for your people to audit those. So it's fantastic. It comes in electronically. It's easy. The computers will actually flag out some of the logs, so we're not having to review every single log. We only have to look at the ones that it flags out saying it's either incomplete or out of compliance. And then, like I said, vehicles manufactured before year 2000 are not required to have ELDs in them. Some people will continue. I know a few folks that will continue to run older log or older trucks so that they don't have to put ELDs in them. I also know a couple of companies that said, we're going to stay in a 100-mile radius. We just will not go outside the 100-mile radius. Now, you can do that if you normally run close to home and you only go outside periodically, as long as you don't go outside the 100-mile radius more than 8 days in a 30-day period, you don't have to have an ELD. You can run a paper log on those days that you go outside. Some advantages. As I said, the drivers, they get used to those. It's really, really simple. They're not having to, you know, write lines on a paper. You're just pushing buttons all day long. It's filed at the end of the day. The logs are accurate to a minute, which actually drivers find out that, that helps. Prior on paper logs, you're doing them every 15 minutes. So as you log, you're going through, you can eat up some of your drive hours just by rounding one way or the other. And so drivers will gain a little bit of time during their day because they're accurate to a minute. For the company, GPS tracking. We know where every vehicle is within 50 feet all day long. It's really a great advantage to us. So that's not a great picture, but that's a screenshot of showing our fleet, and all of those colored dots around shows where every truck we have is on the road at any given time. Huge advantage for us. One day we had an officer from a little town south of us called and said, we just had one of your trucks turn around in a parking lot in town, and it's not an area that we should be in. Said when they pulled out of that parking lot, they hit the fence and knocked it over, and you guys are going to have to pay to repair it. So my son said, well, let me check it out. What time was, you know, did this happen between X and X? And they had gone down to our customer and got the times that we were in there and said, yeah, you had a truck in there, and just assumed that that was us. He said, let me do some checking. He geofenced, drew a line around where that area was, isolated it, and put in the parameters from this time, and we had no trucks in that area. It did show we had trucks coming in and out of the mill, but they made their proper route. He was able to screenshot that back, send it to the officer, and she said, okay, I got the wrong company, and went on. Otherwise, had we not had that, we would have paid for that fence. So it's really a huge advantage. We also had another driver that was reported to have, during heavy traffic, gone off and run down the frontage road at a fairly high rate of speed. I mean, we would set the speed limit, but certainly not for frontage road. So we had a driver called in and said, hey, your driver's doing this, it's an unsafe act. We got on and it dropped a breadcrumb on that vehicle every 15 seconds. We were able to see that, yes, he in fact did take off, went to the frontage road, and ran all the way down there at, you know, highway speeds, and then came back on. So we were able to pull him in and do some disciplinary action, because it'll tell you what lane of the freeway the truck is in, not just that it's on the freeway heading, you know, heading north or south, and it'll show us the speed that they were at, and also tell us what lane it is in. So it's great for coaching. It's been real good for us for being able to show drivers where they can improve. We're able to drop breadcrumbs all the way down through, show you exactly what, and each of those breadcrumbs has what speed they're going, direction, and what lane. There we go. And that's a view of the log. It's really good, nice, clean, neat, and totals all your hours on the right hand side. Come on.
Battery's back.
Yeah. There we go. So it also, based on certain speed limit is on every highway in the United States, and will tell us if the driver's driving more than 3 to 5 miles an hour over the posted speed limit, tells if hard accelerations, hard braking, hard cornering, they're going into corners too fast. And then the little map down there on the right shows hot zones. So if that driver does the same thing every day, it'll show areas that they may not drive very well, coming down the hill too fast, going through a school zone too fast. So it gives us areas that we can isolate our coaching to coach to what they need, as opposed to saying you need to drive better. And so it's really been a great advantage to us there. Disadvantages. I said the logs are accurate to a minute. They're accurate to a minute. That 30-minute rest break, the lunch break, that's probably the toughest thing we do. If they end their lunch break at 29 minutes, they're in violation the rest of the day. Or they have to take another 30-minute rest break. Where on a paper log, they just mark in 30 minutes and go on about their business. But so it is accurate to a minute, which is an advantage. I got blood buzzing me, so. But there are some disadvantages as well. The 10 hours off, also, drivers will be anxious sometimes to go to work, especially if they've had a long day the day before. They want to get out and get back on that time period that they had. So sometimes they'll push that 10 hours off. Again, if they start at 9 hours and 59 minutes, they're in violation for the next day. If the ELD malfunctions, this has been a bit of a challenge sometimes. If the driver's on the road and the ELD goes down, they need to immediately start a paper log, and we need to get them their past 8 days, because they're supposed to carry with them 8 days of logs all the time. So they've got to find a truck stop, a customer, something like that, so that we can scan and email them or fax them their last 8 days. That can be a challenge sometimes, especially if they're in remote areas. So the flexibility has gone out of the driver's control. Used to, drivers would take their lunch when they needed to, so they would do, though, they would break up that lunch break. They'd break, they'd stop when they needed to, and then they'd ride in half hour somewhere, because all told, they'd be a half hour, but they just marked that down. And as long as it was within reason, DOT did not write citations based on that, as long as they weren't, 2 hours off from that half hour lunch break. At this point, it's really difficult. They have to know when they took that half hour, so they don't get to break it up. If they were stuck in traffic, they'd ride a break. They'd ride an off-duty break in there to absorb that inefficiency. Well, they can't do that now. If they're running at 30 miles an hour, they're still on the clock, and it's still counted as drive time. Where when they were running a paper log, they'd write some off-duty time in there and be able to absorb that. Loading and unloading. We all know that it gets to be backups, especially during busy times. We've got trucks waiting in line. They used to ride in lunch breaks there. They can a little bit, but there's some really strict being able to take lunch breaks on a customer site. There's some real strict rules around that. They need to be able to be completely off duty, and if they have time, be able to call a cab and go down and watch a movie or have lunch. If they're not free to do that, that's not off duty time. It's on duty, not driving. So they can't absorb that. With a paper log, they were able to do that a bit more. So those are all challenges with ELDs and you know exactly where they are as well. So with them being able to, cite where they are and the time that happened, you just don't have that flexibility to be able to write that in. Why is this important? We're about 50,000 drivers short right now nationwide. In the next 8 years, we're supposed to go somewhere around 175,000 to 200,000 drivers short in the United States. That is not going to help us move product. And especially all of you folks that have a pretty short window on when you get to move your product to market, it's going to really create issues. I was at Oregon Trucking Association last week, and there was a lot of talk. There was a lot of talk around preferred shipper lists. All of us, you know, with the cost of investment, new trucks now are about $150,000 to $170,000. New trailers, $50,000 to $100,000. With that kind of investment and no drivers to drive them, everybody's kind of looking at their book of business and saying, okay, what can we do to cover the customers that contribute to us most? And so everyone was looking at, we have a preferred shippers list. And we do that business first and take on the rest of it later. So especially in the world where you all have this short window, you got lots of product to move, but it's got to be in this time frame, how do you get on that preferred shippers list? It's not all about the money. Ultimately, it is somewhat, but inefficiencies are huge. Drivers hate to sit. Drivers want to drive because that's what they get paid for. We cover our drivers when they're in standby time, so we pay that time. Not all companies do. So if that driver's sitting in your yard waiting to get loaded so that he can go out and deliver that load, good possibility he's not getting paid for that. And now he can't take lunch breaks and take off duty time and be able to drive that extended time to get the load delivered. So that's eating into his pay at the end of the day. So it may not even be the company, but that driver's not getting paid. And they just don't like to sit. They got family just like you and I do. So they want to get home to their families. And they know if they sit there for 2 hours, they still have to deliver the same number of loads probably to get the day done or to get home to their home terminal. So look for ways. So how do you become a preferred shipper? Eliminate delay time as much as possible. Does that mean you have to put a second forklift driver on? Possibly. Does that mean you can create a pool of trailers that people can drop and hook, preloaded, drop and hook and go? Possibly. But look for ways to cut out those inefficiencies so the driver is not sitting. Some drivers, if they sit and wait a lot and they don't get home time, they'll leave that company and go someplace else. So we as companies are looking at all of those inefficiencies as well and saying, we've got to cut that out because we're going to lose that driver. And with the kind of driver shortage we're looking at, we just can't stand that. You know, the big companies, their turnovers are running up close to 100% per year. If they can cut that down 10 or 15%, it's huge dollars to them. So try to cut out those inefficiencies. And then Anthony and I, we worked with Anthony last few years. We worked with him real closely this year on their transportation. Start partnering with the companies. And it may be one company, it may be multiple companies, but now's the time to have the conversation. Do you have a pool of trailers? Will the trucking company help you develop that pool of trailers to be able to preload? Are there four or five companies that had a little bit of slack time during that springtime rush? And can they dedicate some of their resources to be able to take on some of the deliveries that you have in that small window? So the conversations need to be happening now. Trucks are about 6 months out if you order one today. Used truck market is really tight. There's lots of trucks out there, but the prices are going up, so it probably makes more sense to invest in new long-term. Trailers, and I'm not sure about flatbeds, but we do a lot of wood chips up in the Northwest. Trailers right now, if I ordered one today, would be about July of next year before it come off the line. So equipment is an issue too, just because there's so much equipment being ordered. There we go. So what's next with all of this technology now in the rig? What can we do? Are there ways that we, you know, so we're doing some things efficiency-wise. Because of GPS and geofencing, we geofence every one of our customers, and we know how long it takes every truck to go in and out of that yard all day long, every day. And we run reports so that we know it's pretty easy to lose track on a day-to-day basis. We run reports to see which customers have the most delay time. Customers with long delay times don't make the preferred shippers list very often. What else can we do? For us, you know, it's delivering the safety message. We talk a lot about safety. We're real big on safety. But it's really hard to eat up people's time, and we never have everybody in the same place at the same time. Can we deliver safety messages? Can we deliver information about a specific customer? So as soon as we dispatch that load, we've got load procedures and maps of the customer's site. Can we deliver that through a tablet to the driver so that they know exactly who to talk to, who to call, you know, the map of how you get on the site, off the site. So now that we've introduced technology to the truck, I think there's some huge things we can do over time. And we can help you with, okay, if we're seeing delay times, we can give you reports to show that, yes, in fact, on Tuesdays in the afternoon, you're always busy. Let's stay away from that time. We can help some of those inefficiencies out. So with that, I'm going to open it up for questions. Like I said, we can dig as far into the weeds as you want, and I'll make up a few answers if I don't know. So
I've got two questions.
Okay.
First question, I'm just curious, which GPS software do you use for your truck
now? We use E-Road.
I saw that.
Just E-Road. E-R-O-A-D. They're based in Tualatin. We chose them, and I'm not going to do a big commercial. They're from New Zealand, but we chose them because in Oregon they have a weight mile tax as opposed to a fuels tax. And they do an incredible job at tracking that. They'll even change configurations if you have that. So we did that, but we really like their e-logs as well. They've done a great job with that. Shortage is also exacerbating that just a little bit. Reason for the driver shortage? Freight is expanding, and it's expected to expand about 20% over the next 6 to 8 years. And retirees, about half of it. We've got an older workforce, and about half of that million drivers we need in the next 8 years, about 450,000 of that is folks that are going to retire.
Curious, since this law went into effect in December, if you've kind of seen any statistics about what the annual increase in cost has been. I think anecdotally, I've talked to people, they've said about a 20% increase in shipping cost. Curious if you see that. And a follow up to that is, do you, what kind of do you foresee for next year in terms of costs?
In our industry, and I can speak to our company saw an increase, but it was probably 3 to 5%. We did not build our business model around running over hours. We always pushed our drivers to stay within the hours of service, so it wasn't a huge change. Where it has changed is, drivers running up to his 14 hours, gets close to home, but they're still a half hour away. Instead of driving that home, on a paper log, they'd drive home and log it. Now, because of the ELDs, we'll take another driver out there, swap drivers, and have somebody else drive that truck home. So it's added a little bit of cost. If, in fact, you're running or you're running over hours a lot and expecting the driver to absorb that, I can see probably 15-20% fairly easily. I think once this is in, so I would say ELDs probably is not the biggest driver of driver's wages. The last 20 years, drivers have not kept up, and I think we're seeing the effect of that. I think it's supply and demand that will drive drivers' wages continually. I heard on the radio, it was a long-haul carrier. They said they raised wages 3 times this year, up around 17 to 20% total. So drivers' wages are increasing. We personally, I think we increased about 10% the first of this last year, and kind of got on the front edge. So I think, we're going to continue. I think we have to continue to give drivers an increase to be able to track them. So.
Yeah, you had mentioned gathering wait time, load time by shipper.
Yes.
Did you share that information with the shipper?
We do.
Okay.
Yeah. And so, we'll have conversations. Most of our customers, we scale in and out at their place, so they know that. Not every shipper, that's the case. So we will go into the ones that don't have that that information already in their system, and we'll share that with them.
You laid out a lot of facts about drivers retiring, shortages, and so forth. What's the industry doing to try to change that scenario and attract younger, newer drivers, or what have you?
I don't know if everybody heard that. So what are we doing to attract drivers, either younger or newer? There's a pilot project being proposed right now on a federal level that, and I'll try to make sure I get this right. So right now we have to wait until we're 21 years old to be able to hire them. Our insurance company is pushing that to 24, 25. We get a little bit of leeway in that. But they're pushing on a national level. Drivers between 18 and 21 can drive intrastate, so within state borders. They're pushing to be able to go 18 to 21 year olds that have military experience presently. So that's the push now. I think eventually, especially with the technology that's on the new trucks, so all the trucks we're buying now have roll stability. If you go into a corner too fast, it'll actually brake and slow the truck down. We have collision avoidance, just like on your new Mercedes. It will avoid or mitigate the severity of an accident. Adaptive cruise control, the driver can set the cruise, and if they come up behind a slower vehicle, the truck will slow down until that vehicle gets out of their way or changes lanes. All automated transmissions, those kind of things. So we're trying to attract more people through making it, a more comfortable job. we're buying everything with satellite radio and activating those satellite radio. I think we're going to have to do a lot better job of attracting younger people. The unfortunate part is a person gets out of high school and we say go forth and conquer, and they go out and bounce around, and when they're 24, 25 years old, they say, well, I've tried everything else, I guess I could be a truck driver. And that's unfortunately what's happening. We're not getting people that really want to be truck drivers when they're 18, 19 years old and are ambitious. We're getting the folk that's kind of their last resort. And that's really unfortunate. And that, insurance is going to be a big part of that, but we as an industry would love to be able to attract those younger drivers, but I think we've got to look at the training piece too. Right now, if you have $5,000 in your hand and go to a CDL school in 4 weeks, you can be a truck driver. Actually, in 4 weeks, you can have a CDL in your hand, and you're a very entry-level truck driver. Most of the folks coming out of schools, they're mandatory, have to be 40 hours in the truck. They drive about a third of that time. In 2 days of our training, we put them through more drive time than what they get in a CDL school in 4 weeks. So we really have to work on that piece of it.
Do you foresee like the self-driving trucks playing a role in this anytime soon?
So self-driving trucks, autonomous vehicles, they make a lot of news, and they're great, wonderful. I don't think it'll be in my career that we'll see it throughout the industry. So one, talking to manufacturers, they say it's probably 2030 before they really have good production vehicles that would be autonomous. I think there'll be lots of pilot projects. Right now, the technology sees the lines on the highway as to keep you centered and going down the road. What happens when it snows? What happens when there's rain and ice and whatever else? And there's sections of road that just, we just repaired it. We have no lines. We haven't striped it yet. What is the truck going to do at that point? And do we want to have our kids and our grandkids in cars next to a truck that may or may not see the line? I think that's all going to have to be worked out. So I think there's a lot of issues with autonomous vehicles. I see a lot of things. I think the ports. So the ports do a lot of really short haul from the rock yard to the port and back, 2 or 3 miles each way, could be at fairly low speeds. I think that's where it's going to start. Be able to do some of those things. And then eventually, but I'm thinking it's going to be 20 years before we're going to see it. And some of that's going to just be society. Us accepting that there is, we look up at a 105,000 pound truck and there's nobody sitting in the seat. It's a little bit unnerving. I'm not sure I'd want to do that.
Talked in percentages of pay increasing. So, in terms of real dollars, what are truckers paying?
So I have to look as the legal guy in. So he's asking about real dollars, and I think it is. So as far as what truck drivers make, I can only give you ranges, and it probably varies from industry to industry and from geographical area. In our area, if a driver's working, then most drivers work 60 to 70 hours a week. Our drivers will make anywhere from 55 to 70,000 a year, which ain't bad, but they're working 60 to 70 hours a week. I know industries that, they're making still, $15 an hour, $40,000 a year, and still working 60 or 70,000 dollars or hours a week. There was an article last December, I think it was, in one of the magazines, and they said if a driver in 1979 had just kept up with inflation, at that time, I don't remember the number, it was around 45 or 50,000 a year those drivers made at that time. No, I wasn't that. It wasn't even just in Florida. But if they had kept up with inflation, they'd be making $101,000 a year just keeping up with inflation as of 2016. Most drivers are making, you know, $50,000 to $60,000 a year. That's one of the reasons we don't have enough drivers. So, because we just haven't kept up with other skilled labor. And there's lots of reasons for that. Deregulation was a big one. Prices went way down because there was lots more competition. Fuel prices. A lot of the fuel prices and taxing and those things like that cut into trucking companies, and the driver was the only variable that we couldn't, you know. We had to pay all the other ones, you know. If you don't pay your taxes, the tax man is coming. If you don't pay your fuel bill, if you don't get fuel, at some point you're going to be out of business. So the driver absorbed all of those things over time. And, you know, as difficult as that is, we're going to have to do something, and unfortunately, the tax man is still coming. In Oregon, they just did a new tax package. Washington has done one a few years ago. So they're still looking for dollars. And trucking companies are, you know, hey, we got big, you know, big trucks, and they're very expensive. It's really easy to tax trucking companies. And we're not a big voice. So there's not lots of us out there. And so it's really easy to target trucking companies for more money. So I don't know if that answered your question. You know, our guys are $20 to $25 an hour. I know oil companies are $25 to $30. The FedEx and those guys are over $30. And so, anyway, that's kind of a range. I don't, you know. Any other questions?
For that driver that's approaching the 14 hours, can you get him home using personal conveyance if he's empty?
It depends. So he was asking about personal conveyance. There are some really big restrictions on personal conveyance, and we don't use that a lot, so I don't know 100%. But if that is a normal course of his route to deliver the load, I'm going to say no. Because if he's, you know, in our area, if he delivers, you know, went from Kelso, Washington to Eugene, Oregon, and he's on his way back from Eugene to come back to Kelso, and that's where his home terminal is, I'm going to say that's part of that delivery. It's not personal conveyance. Personal conveyance is supposed to be used when a driver is going to overnight someplace, and he's going downtown to grab a burger, because that's the only way he can do that. He or she, I'm sorry. If they're home, so they come home and they drop their trailer in your yard and take the truck home, because that's, you've allowed them to do that. That's personal conveyance. It is not supposed to be a continuation of the trip. So could you get by with it? Maybe, but I think you run big risk of, you know, if I'm an officer looking at that, I'm gonna say no, that was a continuation of the trip and righteous citation. I think my time is up. So I appreciate being able to be here today, and have a great rest of your conference.
Thank you, Dale.